good afternoon, everyone listening in Australia. Good evening to everyone listening in the US, and welcome everyone listening from across the world. For those of you that are listening live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, or Twitch, we have Payo ready and waiting to send you any links about anything that Amanda and I talk about on the show today. And a reminder too that you can catch the replays of any of these shows on Binge TV USA, Hero Go TV USA, and on the Tony TV channel app on all LG, Roku, and Samsung smart TVs across the planet. And the links for those connections will be in your chat box as we speak. Now, let me tell you about our beautiful guest today, Amanda Carples, whose interview is titled Our New Approach to Communication, Breaking Down Barriers. Now, Amanda is the youngest of five. She was born in Zimbabwe. Her family left during the civil war in the late 70s following death threats to the family due to her father's high profile position. They've moved firstly to New Zealand and then, how lucky are we, to Australia when she was a child. Her father died when she was 16, and Amanda has always had to be independent. She worked in onion factories, the graveyard shifts to fund a university study, and has always valued and enjoyed opportunities to travel and study, and enjoys loving life that is inspired and innovative around her and her experiences. She has a 13-year-old son who is wise beyond his age. And Amanda comes to us from Brisbane, and she's a Brisbane-based entrepreneur who's developed an emergency communication platform that offers an agile solution to the dynamic risks of remote and isolated work situations. Her focus is upon elevating safety, performance, bringing safety and safety communication to the front line. Amanda has extensive legal, business, and finance management experience spanning 20 years. And she has had her own legal practice and has been a partner in a national legal firm. During her tenure, she acted for small and large enterprises and individuals in all areas of injury law, from the Magistrates Court to the High Court of Australia. She's forensically examined over 4,000 workplace injuries in conjunction with the experts to identify the legal culpability around workplace accidents. And due to workplace prosecutions, coronial inquiries, and workers' compensation liability. In 2008, co-founders Amanda and Ash Runya joined together to develop a digital solutions that would enable organizations to take rapid, relevant safety action in a crisis or emergency and reduce the risk associated with people working in remote and dynamic locations. Safety Tag was developed based on extensive workplace health and safety, occupational health and safety research and insights, 20 years of legal practice in workplace health and safety, and 20 years experience developing easy-to-use technology solutions that drive efficiency in operations. Amanda seeks to disrupt what is meant to be safe. Now, I thought I'd start today with Amanda with some quick statistics around workplace accidents. And I'm wondering if the audience realizes that just in Australia alone, this year, 84 Australian workers have been killed at work. In 2020, 182 were killed at work, and in 2019, 183 were killed. The total cost to workers and the community of workplace accidents is $61.8 billion. And we have some interesting facts that I will get Payo to pop into the chat box for you around the balance of male employees, their age groups, their mechanisms. And interestingly, Over 5,000 Americans lost their lives in 2018 due to workplace injuries. So that is the start of the topic, our topic today. Amanda, welcome to Radio Tony Everyday Business. I'm delighted to have you here today. I want to start with a little bit about you and your story. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you very much, Tony.
So that initial journey from South Africa to New Zealand and Australia must have been monumental as a young child.
Yeah, look, I was pretty young. Being the youngest of five, I probably wasn't really subjected to most of the stress that was going on, but certainly the ability to leave Zimbabwe in those days was becoming increasingly difficult. My family had had death threats made against them, and so my father had made the decision to leave. He suffered from cancer at the time, and so there was a discussion about whether we would, you know, move to somewhere else in Africa or whether we would go back to the UK. My mum was born in England, and eventually a decision was made to come to New Zealand. Leaving Zimbabwe was very, very difficult. We had a boat planned. We had all of our belongings on the boat. And at the last moment, the boat was commissioned for alternate purposes and we lost our passage. So my father had to drive down to Pretoria to try and change the plans at the last minute to try and get us on a flight. We had to collect all our belongings and send them a different way. And, you know, my mum and five kids turned up at the airport at the last minute trying to get on a flight to New Zealand. And at that time, my father hadn't turned up and my mum was trying to delay the flight and they were trying to get us to leave. And mum was like, I'm not going to get on that plane till my husband's here. And luckily he arrived at the last moment.
Wow.
I think one of the most difficult things at the time was just a sense of not really belonging anywhere. You know, we'd left this country that we really loved. I loved Zimbabwe. Dad loved Zimbabwe.
Yes.
And, you know, he died when I was 16 and he never went back. He really wanted to, but he never made it back. Partly because he was just scared that, you know, it had changed so much and he wouldn't be welcomed, you know. But I went back when I was 16 and I loved that experience. It was really nice to see where it was going, and I felt really optimistic about it. Unfortunately, from that point, which was about 1985, it has taken a bit of a hit, and I'm hoping it will come good in the end. You know, I think it's a beautiful country.
Yes, yes. So essentially it's still not really safe, is what you're saying, Amanda?
Yeah, no, it's not. And unfortunately it's not safe for all of the different communities that live there. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, who you are, what race or creed. It's really just such a state of flux at the moment. And, you know, really it needs a strong leader to pull it all back together, you know. Another Nelson Mandela would be nice, but unfortunately we haven't got that at the moment. So.
Yeah. Wow. So you immigrated and moved from New Zealand to Australia, and then there's that lovely little way that you funded university, working the graveyard shift as an ex-nurse. I know all too well what it's like to work the graveyard shift. What drew you to law in the first place? What was it that attracted you?
Look, I always had a sense of wanting to do something to help people. And, you know, when you start law, a lot of law students, you know, have that same sense of, you know, wanting to change the world. I really did share that. And, you know, to begin with, I felt that I was doing great things. People would come in and they would have, you know, private concerns or injuries and they'd be looking for legal support. But over time, I just became really quite jaded with the whole legal process. You know, I found that really what happened was people got caught up in fights. And, you know, the longer the fight went, the more money the lawyers got paid. So some lawyers, you know, want to settle. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I just felt I was at the wrong side of things, and I wanted to do something that was more proactive. I wanted to actually be part of the solution of preventing injuries at the front, not just dealing with the aftermath. You know, some of those coronial inquiries that I did, and you know, some of the workplace injuries, they were pretty horrific. You know, it's quite challenging as a person to see families go through that type of trauma. And I think, you know, knowing that perhaps we can do something at the other end, it gave me just to do something different.
So I'm guessing, Amanda, that besides death, which is a horrible workplace outcome, but there is the whole gamut of trauma and injury between that space between death. So there's workplace stress, there's loss of limbs, there's falls, trips, there's a whole range of things that happen in the workplace. And I guess that's kind of triggered you to try and make workplaces safer for the employees. And was that what brought you to the SafeTag discovery?
Yeah. Look, when you look at workplace injuries, you tend to find that what's happening is there's a breakdown, and it's generally a breakdown in communication. Yes. You know, people don't want to be injured. People don't deliberately do the wrong thing in the workplace. Not as a whole anyway. And businesses there's a couple of stories where, you know, people would deliberately give themselves a nick to get a couple of stitches so they could go and play golf over the weekend, or, you know, those sorts of stuff.
Oh, my goodness!
But on the whole, people don't really want to be injured. And businesses, they don't want their staff injured either, because, you know, they care about
their
staff.
There's all that paperwork.
And it affects productivity, and it affects, you know, their reputation, you know. So what I found is that there was really just a breakdown in communication being stuck, you know, in the different workplace silos of, you know, human resources and pay and HR and workplace health and safety and operations. And it gets completely isolated and just disconnected. And so when I started doing some research about this, I found that, you know, really a huge proportion of errors, not even just workplace health and safety errors, but errors, 71% occur because of the breakdown in communication. And so I really saw that as a really key way to try and turn things around in the area of workplace health and safety. So, you know, having become very frustrated with law, I decided to try and do something in the tech space.
Yeah. Amanda, when we're talking about communication, is that communication to get help? Is that communication back to head office or a manager or a supervisor? Or is that communication around the whole incident, the way that we document it, the way that we talk about it? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. To be honest, it's all of that. When I talked to workplace health and safety experts, so I gave a talk at the Australian Institute recently, and I talked about, you know, situation awareness. Awareness is about knowing what's going on in the moment. And when you look at situation awareness, you know, if you're a firefighter, then you've probably got a team around you to help keep you on task. You know, if you're climbing a huge ladder, you've got somebody holding the bottom of the ladder, talking to you, making sure that you're not getting fatigued. You know, they're giving you that support to make sure that you stay on task and you're not going to get injured. It's that type of communication that really we need more broadly across workplaces, and particularly when it comes to safety. And we don't do it because unless you're in a really, really high risk, you know, what we call a VORCA type arrangement, then we tend to save costs. And so we tend to just assume that communication will happen, but it doesn't. It's very ad hoc, and it really depends on, you know, the strength of the leaders in the organisation being able to pass relevant information to the relevant people at the right time.
Yeah.
So what we did is we we started a tech solution that's designed around communication. So we looked at, you know, how do we pass information from people at the front line up to managers, and how do they get information back down to the front line to help guide their teams in real time? And that's really the essence of situation awareness, is making sure that people yeah. have got that information to stay safe.
Amanda, Safe Tag is an app for mobile phones, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's an
with
app on
a dashboard. So it's an app
that's
on your
right.
phone, and managers have a dashboard to manage the communications and the team around those communications. So it is actually readily accessible for everyone in an organisation, isn't it?
Look, the thing is, it's about providing safety resources, first aid notes, you know, protocols about staying safe, where to evacuate if there's been an incident. But it's also about sharing in real time, you know, what the nature of the incident is, how severe it is, what you can see around you to help the first responders. You know, it's got an ability. For example, you know, I mean, people, when we talk about working remotely, 2 years ago,
yes.
you would assume I'm talking about people who are maintaining sites on the top of mountains, you know. Whereas today,
yes.
70% of
yes.
us spend time yes. working alone, you know, in your home, even in coffee shops and, in, you know, other people's homes in the community. So really the workplace structure has changed so much, and being able to
communicate
in those really, really dynamic environments is really, really important, you know. So being able to share information from where you are, take a photograph and say, look, this is what's happened, what do you want me to do? And then have a manager say,
yeah.
you know, this is how we want you to respond. But also being able to warn other people to stay clear because there's been an incident,
yes.
you know, sharing that information in the moment.
Have you got an example of a workplace injury or event that you can share with the audience to demonstrate how wonderful SafeTag is?
Yeah, look, a couple. I'll take one which is probably
yes.
from community health, because some of our
yes.
customers are sort of carers and they go into people's homes. One of our customers mentioned that she had been working and this is before she became a customer. She'd been working with a dementia patient, and she'd gone out onto
yes.
this deck in order to hang some clothes and just hang out some washing for this lady, just to give her a bit of a hand. She was only expecting to be there for 5 minutes, and she slipped on the tiles and she broke her leg. And the door
Ooh.
Was a heavy glass sliding door, and she
yes.
couldn't open it. And so she was stuck on this balcony trying to communicate with the lady inside, and her
who
customer
has dementia
just didn't understand what was going on, you know, and really just didn't respond or open the door or call the police or the ambulance or anything. So
yes,
it took her a long time to open the door and to be able to get to her phone to be able to raise the alert. So SafeTag has self-monitoring timers. So, you know, if you've checked in for a 10-minute activity, people know what the activity
yes.
is, they know where you are, and when you don't tap in, they get an alert to say you haven't tapped in, and that allows them to come and help
wow.
you. So that's one
Definitely.
Example. Another example is in the maintenance space. We had another customer who is now using our software, had a team that would go on to a site to do some maintenance work, and when they arrived at the site, there'd been evidence of some tampering of the front gate. And so they phoned that in, and then they went inside to check, and the person was still on the site, and he was pretending to be an employee of Telstra, I think it was in those days, and he was, you know, trying to bluff his way through, but he was there to steal some of the equipment, and very quickly they
yeah.
understood that. And so they pretended to believe his story, and then they tried to leave, and this guy chased
Why?
Them. And it actually ended up being them, you know, having to phone the police and the police coming and this guy being in a, you know, a shoot-off with the police. So, again, you know, things can change quite rapidly in a situation where you just don't know what you're expecting. And so now they use Safe Tag in order to set, you know, just follow me timers for those first few moments when they arrive, so that if something goes south or pear-shaped, then their teams know exactly where they are and they can offer some assistance, you know.
Definitely. Amanda, how are businesses communicating or staying in touch with their staff at the moment when they haven't got a product like SafeTag?
Yeah, look, it's a real mismatch of options. In the carer space, a lot of businesses are still using whiteboards. You know, as you walk out of the office, you write on the whiteboard where you're going and a time you expect to be back. And at the end of the day, if you haven't come back and rubbed your name off, somebody might try and give you a call.
Then,
you know, and sometimes they assume you just forgot or you couldn't be bothered because, you know, it was late and you just went straight home. It requires you to come back to the office to check in or to phone and get somebody else to wipe it off. So, you know, using SafeTag allows that sort of scheduling to be automated. The other thing is calendars. You know, a lot of businesses will use calendars.
Yes.
I might use a calendar. Oh, you know where I am. It's in my calendar. But you might go to, say you're a real estate agent. You might go to do an inspection.
Yes.
But they're not ready for you. So you might go and do something else first and then come back. Because you just changed your day around, you may not have changed your calendar. Well, you arrive, something goes wrong. People actually think you're somewhere else. And so if they're going to be phoning the police or looking for you, they're actually going to be looking in the wrong location. So, again,
that
allows you to be flexible.
Amanda, what sort of expectations do businesses have around keeping their staff safe?
Look, again, it's a real mixture. You know, there are people who take safety of their staff very seriously, and so they would be speaking to them on the phone, you know. They would call and say, look, I'm just going into this house and I'll be out in an hour. They would record that on a spreadsheet. When they come out, they would phone and check in. If they don't phone, they would phone them directly. So there are some very tightly controlled processes. But they're still subject to the same human errors that occur. You know, someone goes to lunch and they haven't managed to get in contact with you. Sometimes they don't think anything's gone wrong, so they just go to lunch anyway. You know, so it's a really tricky situation. There is often a focus on the activity rather than the person, you know, knowing that the work's being done, perhaps they're just running late and just ignoring it. So there are some inconsistencies when it comes to, you know, the pull of efficiencies around getting the job done and keeping people, you know, on task and keeping people safe. And it's that disconnect that that wastes time and costs money.
Costs money. It, as we said at the beginning of the show, it costs billions, which when I was researching for the show, I was just gobsmacked that there was that much money essentially tied up with people not being safe or not being safe in their work environment. I was astonished. So that's why I was looking forward to talking about those statistics. In terms of technology, are businesses readily accepting the advancements in technology? Because there's some wonderful tools for business out there now, and particularly SafeTag for keeping their staff safe. Are businesses readily accepting technology, Amanda?
Look, again, I think there's a really broad cross-section. I think smaller businesses are worried that the cost is going to be prohibitive. What they need to understand, though, is that technology is actually allowing them to use a process or a tool that previously they couldn't afford, you know, because technology is allowing the cost of that communication process to really come down, you know. People using SafeTag, the cost is literally a few dollars a week to, you know, a few dollars a month, you know. So it's not a huge amount. So when it comes to these sorts of processes, it is time for businesses to start looking because, you know, sounding a fire alarm, while the technology around fire alarms has become increasingly expert, it's 100 years old and no one's updated the process.
Yes.
It's crazy that if there's a fire, you don't even know whether there is a fire. You know, the alarm goes off. How many people sit at their desk and say, I'll wait and see if this is just a training exercise, you know?
Absolutely. Or it's they're just testing the fire alarms.
Exactly. So, you know, being told this is not a training exercise, is it that extra few minutes will save lives, you know?
And also being told
that the fire's at a particular location. So if you're going to evacuate, you know, use a different set of stairs or something as granular as that really becomes important. So, you know, I think technology is there. People who do know it's there are starting to adopt it. But most businesses, you know, they're just looking for a really quick fix. I've seen quite a few businesses using panic buttons, and whilst they're great, they're just one tool. And if you look at your phone, I mean, I've got over 100 apps on my phone at the moment, and so if I've got if I've got an app for a check-in and an app for a panic button, then it's not going to cut it. It's just, you know, app chat groups.
Yeah.
You know, talk about using chat groups for safety communication. If there's an incident, within a few moments you've got 300 or 400 messages put into that chat group. So how do you know what is actually trusted?
Which is urgent. Yeah.
What you should follow, you know? How do you know? And it becomes this mess and it just causes even more confusion.
Yeah.
So people are starting to use technology, but I think they're trying to use the wrong technology.
Yeah, that was my next question. With the current clients you have that use Safety Tag, how is it playing out for their staff? Do they think it's good? Do they feel safer? Is it easy to use? What's been the feedback, Amanda?
Yeah, look, the last business we onboarded said that they had no pushback from their staff at all. So we were really pleased about that.
Wow.
I think we're seeing a shift generally in people's attitude to safety. I know when I first started speaking to people, you know, 2 years ago, and I used to say to them, look, you know, this is designed to keep your staff safe. People used to say to me, we don't want to be tracked. We don't want you to know what we're doing. So we were very careful in the early days to make sure that we don't track and we are protecting people's privacy. There are lots tools out there that do track 24/7, and people don't like to be followed. They turn off their location settings. They even turn off their phone, pick out the battery sometimes, you know, because they're so worried.
Yes.
So, you know, we focus on trust and trying to get people to understand and know what's being shared, when and why. And I think we're overcoming those barriers now. Once upon a time, people used to take safety processes as a way of saying you don't trust me to do the right thing, you know, or I don't need
that's
this
not
I'm an expert already, you know. And what they don't realize is that part of being professional is using the tools around you, and this is just another one of those tools.
Definitely. And conversely, if you're a paid worker, not only does the employer have responsibilities, but conversely, the employee has certain responsibilities. So the whole idea that you should be untrackable whilst in paid employment is kind of a bit, you know, you're actually being paid as an employee. If the employer wants to use SafeTag to keep you safe, then there shouldn't be an issue because it's not about tracking, it's about safety. And
yeah, look, it's funny. When in my generation, you know, we grew up not admitting risk or fault, you know, and it was very much you had to be tough to survive. And I think that type of mantra, it's a very Australian philosophy. It's also a very US philosophy where, you know, you're a wuss or you're weak if you ask for help. And that type of mantra is slowly changing in the workplace. People are now saying, actually, it's my right to be safe, and it's an entitlement
absolutely
to be supported. And we're seeing quite a really important psychological shift to people's attitudes to safety. And I think that's a great thing. I think
that is.
Yeah, I think that will allow people to listen and to follow safety processes more, and it'll lead to quite a lot of safety improvements, I think.
Yeah, because, you know, any death at work is a horrible, horrible thing. And it would be wonderful to know that we were so safe at work that we had no deaths, but the gap between that happening is about making sure that people are safe, as safe as they can possibly be, because we can't negate life. We can't negate things that we have no control over. So those things will still happen. But if we could reduce those numbers, and if we could reduce that impact, wouldn't that be a wonderful world?
Oh, it would. And, you know, I believe a lot of this would be quite readily achievable. I think, you know, a lot of people, when they go to work, they just think about getting the job done as quickly as possible. And I think that mindset needs to change. You know, there's so many injuries or, you know, incidents that I've been involved in where several things have gone wrong at the same time to actually cause the death, right? The radio's not worked, the machinery's faulty, the person working it hasn't been trained properly, and it all comes together at that really one critical moment that where somebody does something silly and suddenly they're trapped in the machinery and they're dead, you know. Mm-hmm. And up until that point, if you asked any one person about the workplace, they would go, oh, it's fine, don't worry about it, you know, you're just annoying me, you're taking up my time, you know. But if you ask them afterwards, they would all be saying, why didn't you force us to do this? Or why did you let this get to the point where somebody was killed? And it's that dichotomy that's really quite difficult to navigate as an employer trying to get staff to allow them to introduce safety processes. But also, you know, families who are caught up by it, you know, knowing that their staff member is going into somebody's house and staying overnight without any processes to keep them safe, not knowing who they're, whether they're affected by drugs or alcohol or illness. You know, these are things that families have got a right to be involved in. And one thing we've done with SafeTag is we've actually allowed individuals to have private safety contacts as well as work contacts. So we're trying to bridge, you know, that workplace obligation with the ability to keep your family comforted as well.
That was actually one of my questions, because whilst we're focused on an employment setting within companies and businesses, I'm assuming that this actually has potential to work in other situations. So perhaps mum is suffering from a bit of dementia, or perhaps a bit unstable with walking around. I'm guessing that you could adapt SafeTag to those situations as well. It's not just for businesses.
Oh, absolutely. And we had, when we very first started, I had a person contact me and say, look, I've had a stroke and I'm using SafeTag because my family are just really, really paranoid about my safety.
Comforted.
And they won't let me out of the house without me telling them exactly where I'm going and how long I'm going to be and what I'm doing. And now I can use SafeTag with my levels set to a certain arrangement. So I'm not telling them anything about what I'm doing. But if I don't tap in, then the message about what I'm doing is stored there and it will be shared with them along with my GPS. And they can see that I've gone shopping or that I've, you know, gone down to the local restaurant, and they get the GPS and they can then come to where I am and check on me or phone the ambulance, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
But also groups, you know, community groups, volunteers. If you deal with large numbers of people.
Search parties.
Search parties,
Search parties,
SES,
for instance.
absolutely. You know,
Yes.
you're dealing with people who are giving their time to try and help out. And unfortunately, sometimes they get injured too. And, you know, knowing where they are and being able to give them that support, that's also really, really important, you know. If there's a, there's a workplace death, and we're not even talking about it being a worker who dies, if there's a workplace death, if you're in control of that workplace, then it is likely that you will go to jail. That is where we are today. And so it's really important now, from a business perspective, if you're managing volunteers and multiple teams, that you actually take this risk seriously and you start to put into place some sort of measure so that you can to monitor and offer assistance so people can raise the alert so that they can complete a roll call or they can do something to let you know that they need your help.
Yeah. Amanda, so the app goes on your phone and you have to use the phone to tap in. So that effectively means that you need to have your phone with you or close to your person at all times. Is that correct?
Well, yes, yes, you do need data and you need to be able to tap in at the right time. But we've got, for example, quite a lot of community support workers up on the north coast of Queensland where data is very patchy. And they would, unfortunately, so they would set a timer to say that I'm driving from A to B. And when they get to the second location, they're expecting to have data. Now, if they don't arrive, even if they don't have data to tap in or to raise the alert will be raised because it's the failure to tap in.
Yes, I haven't tapped in.
I haven't tapped in. And it's cloud-based messaging. So they still get the message about what your activity is and where you're going.
That was my question, thinking about some of the remote places across Australia and indeed many other countries across the road, across the world. How does SafeTag manage in those scenarios? Or is there pretty much we'll be able to get data or connection somewhere?
Look, I think the number of places where there is no data are very small. They tend to be temporary. We do have an Go version of SafeTag, which is designed for really, really, really remote work.
Yes.
But we've actually taken it offline at the moment just because people weren't using it and because the cost of the Iridium Go device suddenly is so expensive. So we found that people were more than comfortable knowing that if they're travelling from A to B, if they don't check in, the alert will still be raised on their behalf. But SafeTag can be used with satellite phones if you need as well.
Okay, which is good to know. I just wanted to quickly ask you about your legal practice and I just wanted you to reflect on how the legal part of keeping workers safe has changed in the last few years. So before you mentioned about the obligation of the employer and if there's a death of an employee, then that business manager, whoever it is likely to go to jail. What else has changed in the intervening time since when you first started and what we have now?
Yeah, look, when I first started, safety really was just an afterthought. It was really about having a document that says you've trained somebody and that you've given them a safe place to work. Today, you know, in Queensland, for example, you know, with manslaughter laws, and that's Australia-wide now actually, you know, there's an increased obligation on the owner of the business and the very senior executive to actually understand what are the risks in their workplace. And they then have to allocate appropriate resources in order to be able to manage and control those risks. And it's in the last 5 years, 2011 saw quite a significant shift with new legislation coming in around workplace health and safety. But it's really been in the last 5 years, and particularly with COVID, where people have suddenly realised that this is actually really important. You know, when COVID hit in Australia, the Division of Workplace Health and Safety in Victoria made an announcement that they were investigating the Victorian government for breaches of workplace health and safety around the deaths of some nurses that happened in New South Wales.
Yes.
Now, nothing really will come of that. But what it did was highlight the importance of every workplace to now look at the risks that COVID places to their staff in their workplace.
Definitely.
And in New South Wales, they introduced legislation that allowed nurses who contract COVID to have the presumption that it occurred because of their work.
In a workplace. Absolutely.
And the stress of having to prove that. But that's New South Wales alone. The rest of Australia hasn't done that, and most countries certainly hasn't done that. So, you know, it's really important, personally, if you're going to go to work, that you understand the risks that are in that workplace, and you make sure, you talk with your business about making sure that they're actually doing something about it to keep you safe.
Mm, definitely. Amanda, I wanted to also talk about some of your plans for the future. And I know that one of your long-term goals is to see a personalised approach to the elevation of safety performance, and that it's integrated across work and public and private spaces. What else is going to go on in the life of Amanda Carvels?
Oh, look, I mean, I've got an 11-year-old son, and so I would like to see him become part of a business that really is trying to make a difference in the world rather than, you know, just taking. I would love to see SafeTag be part of, you know, wearable technology, be part of, you know, people who, you know, are communicating with each other about social things, you know. So that, for example, you can connect to calendars and you can connect to chat groups, and knowing that our artificial intelligence is checking, you know, where those things are going, and making sure you're not being hacked, and making sure that you know, you have the ability to tie down your immediate contacts, so that, you know, your mum who might be vulnerable to listening to SMSs that come in won't click on one incidentally, you know. I think safety has to be part of our every part of our lives, you know, not just really just work. When you leave the workplace,
people
take their hat off and hang it up. I mean, I've done it myself. How many times have I climbed up on the roof to clean out the leaves out of the gutters? You know, I haven't strictly adhered to a safe process. I've used a rusty ladder, and probably even haven't checked it before I've climbed, you know. So it's about making safety that's just incidental with everyday living, automating activity, check-ins, being able to know that, you know, if I haven't tapped in one day, that somebody in my community will know and they'll come and check on me.
And check. Yeah, I know. I had an accident many years ago and badly fractured smashed my wrist whilst in the middle of a paddock in the middle of nowhere. And I had to to crawl from where I was right up to the shed where my phone was, and I was actually thinking about that incident this morning before I jumped on the show to talk to you, and thinking, now I wonder if that would have been if I'd had something on my phone that would have said, okay, I'm going down to water such and such, I'll be an hour. Had I not had something happened, then my family would have known to, oh, okay, what's going on? She hasn't tapped in. It's about making sure that even everyday people are safe. People perhaps, you know, delivering parcels or driving from one place to the next. There's lots and lots of applications for SafeTag across not just business but everyday life.
Yeah, look, that's true. And, you know, I think particularly for families, you know, if you've got kids that are growing up, and, you know, they start clubbing or start traveling, or, you know, they're they're in a different state and you're in lockdown in a different state and you can't get there. Just knowing that if something were to happen, that they've got the ability to raise an alert. I was talking to a guy from Telstra about 12 months ago about the triple O process in Australia. So what I didn't realise is when you phone triple O, you have to actually be able to navigate that initial phone call.
Correct.
You need to be able to either tap buttons. They'll ask you questions. Do you want fire, ambulance, or
police?
You know?
Right.
And if you can't follow those prompts, you will go into an automated pattern. You go into an automated software where they'll ask you a couple more times, and if you can't navigate through that process, it will disconnect.
So
they actually never be able to raise an alert, you know. And there are plenty of situations. My sister was bitten by a dog. She was living in Peru at the time.
Yes.
Phoned 10 people to try and come and help her, and she couldn't speak because she was in shock. It was quite a severe wound on her lower leg. The dog was still there. She had a dog that had fended it off. She phoned 10 people. As soon as they answered, she hung up. She phoned the next one, she hung up. She phoned the next one, and so on. The only way they found her is because literally they took to the streets and walked around looking for her. Now, if she'd had SafeTag, A, they would have known she was walking the dog. B, they would have had her GPS to know exactly where she was. And C, she would have been able to press a button to say exactly what was going on, you know. So it's about that convenience.
Yes, I was just thinking in terms of domestic violence, its ability to keep women and children safer. Have you had many applications from that perspective, Amanda?
Yeah, look, a lot of our social caring support staff are people that work with families who are at risk of family domestic violence.
Yes.
So they would be taking people to court, for example, or they would be going into people's homes to check on them because they may have a disability as well as be at risk. You know, there are lots of situations in that sort of employment arrangement, and certainly SafeTag is being used there already to great effect. As for a person who's at risk, being able to use SafeTag, absolutely they could. If they were really at high risk and if they were still living with their partner, then SafeTag may not be the appropriate tool because it is a safety communication software and it looks like a safety communication software. But if they've left and they are living elsewhere and they're trying to reestablish their lives, then SafeTag is absolutely an excellent idea because it's not tracking them. So if their partner were to hack into their account, they're not going to have any GPS data, but also it allows them to have any number of contacts who can either be near or far with, you know, with whatever messaging and agreed process you would like them to follow. If you get a failure to tap in, phone the police or phone me or come and check on my house or whatever you want them to do, absolutely.
Amazing, Amanda. Amazing. I love technology. I love the convenience it brings, the safety it brings, and just have a love of technology. And SafeTag ticks all of those boxes. Now, you have a special offer for the listeners today. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, look, basically we are running some tests of our de-identified data so that we can learn about safety behaviours, and we're trying to develop an AI and deep learning around that. And so we're looking for businesses or people with small teams who would be interested to take a trial of SafeTag so that we can work with them about what learnings they get from our reporting with a view to then taking on some of those learnings to help develop our AI side of things.
Our AI.
So, yes, please, look, if you're interested to partner with us, get in touch. We're offering you the first 100 people to contact me or businesses to contact me. We're offering you a free intro into SafeTag, and we're offering you the first 6 months free use, And then after that, if you like our product, just keep using it. But during that time, we may send some surveys out just to get some information from you. So if anyone's interested, please get in contact with us. If you think you've got a good case and you can't afford us, get in contact with us anyway. I'd be delighted.
Absolutely.
An intro into SafeTag.
Absolutely. Amanda, I think that is a phenomenal way to test SafeTag in a pretty risk-free way, and definitely will encourage you to connect with Amanda. All the details will be in the chat box, and also attached to any of these interviews, you will see the links to Amanda's app and how to connect with Amanda. And please reach out, ask any questions that you can. We'll also include the website. The website is very easy to follow, has heaps of information on it. And for those of you that are interested in perhaps keeping a loved one a bit safer, I encourage you to reach out and chat to Amanda about the application in those situations, but particularly for business. If you've got rural, remote workers or workers that you want to make sure they're safe, either traveling or going to someone's place, then I encourage you to get in contact with Amanda and the team about SafeTag and make sure that they're safe from now on. Amanda, what else besides the AI do you have planned? And I love the idea that you've already thought about the AI and how the AI might be incorporated. And my understanding is that the AI needs some parameters with which to learn more. So that's why you're asking for people to join, the 100 people to join, because the AI needs that information and data to develop its learning.
That's exactly right. So look, what we're doing is we're trying to integrate SafeTag into a number of different processes. So we're connecting SafeTag to calendars, to scheduling software, to, you know, payroll and HR software, so that it can be used for time recording for payment to customers. It can be used for, you know, if you walk out the door, you can have someone can put something into your calendar and it can pop up and you just accept and off you go. So we're trying to make it really, really incidental
Fantastic.
To kind of activity that you might be doing. But we're also looking to develop the learnings about safety behaviours. So the problem with safety behaviours is there's a real risk that people misinterpret the information. There's a whole lot of learning around the psychology of safety and, you know, how we receive information, what we do with it and all of that. And I've got a psychology degree, and part of my interest there into the future will be to keep working on that side of things so that the more diverse data sets we get, being able to integrate them so that we can give people insights into their own safety-related behaviours and give them probabilities about, you know, the outcomes that can occur. So we've got some really exciting things on the horizon. And we're working with, you know, at the moment in Australia, but we're looking to launch into the US in the next 12 months and Canada and hopefully Japan as well. So, you know, if anyone's got any interest from the US or Canada or Japan, please get in contact.
Absolutely. I was just going to say we've got a big audience in America, Canada, and also in Europe. So I'll be making sure that your links are placed on all the interviews as they go out. Amanda, we are just about out of time. What a fascinating conversation to have. I love your diverse background in law and psychology and workplace accident. And it just occurred to me that if the AI was able to recognize the very human differences in reactions to trauma and accidents. So for some people, it's a freeze and they can't do anything. For other people, it's a run and don't stop running. And there's a whole myriad of behaviors, human behaviors, that go with keeping people safe. So I'll be excitedly watching what happens in the future for SafeTag. Amanda, thank you for being on Radio Tony Everyday Business today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And audience, that's your lot for this week. But don't forget, jump online, connect with Amanda, and check out Safe Tag today. If you're any of the varied applications that we've talked about today, this is a life-changing product for both businesses and individuals. And I'm really delighted that we were able to get Amanda on the show today. That's your lot. We'll be back next week. Amanda Carples, thank you so much. Bye for now.
You.